your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Robin. Welcome to a new episode of the Sox Machine Podcast from the 2025 Winter Meetings. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Tuesday afternoon, December 9, 2025. As we record this show, just in case there is any breaking news that happens after we hit the stop button and stop recording this podcast. And of course, any breaking news that does happen, we'll have it on SoxMachine.com. But in this episode, we're going to catch up on the latest White Sox news and rumors. New starting pitcher Anthony Kay is officially added to the team and chats with their beat reporter James Fegan. There's also some rumors that we can report on regarding the White Sox interest in closer Peter Fairbanks, the Boston Red Sox trade interest in Kyle Teal, and other names that the White Sox could be pursuing with one of our guests, Courtney Finnecombe of Baseball Isn't Boring. But we start this episode prior to the MLB draft lottery on Tuesday and look ahead to the Rule 5 draft on Wednesday. Those are the guaranteed news items for the White Sox that are upcoming as they hope to land the number one overall pick and add another new face to the 40-man roster through the Rule 5 draft. We are lucky to have a first-time guest join the Sox Machine Podcast from Baseball America. It's J.J. Cooper sitting down with Jim Margulis.
Okay, J.J., thanks for joining us on the Sox Machine Podcast here at the Winter Meetings. You are crucially involved in two events over the next day.
It's a fun time here for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, so it starts with the draft lottery, and by the time this comes out, the draft lottery results will be announced. But you are the pool reporter for the draft lottery process and the ping pong balls. And it was pretty, you were a valuable person to talk to last year when the White Sox could only pick as high as 10th. And you said with the way the results actually panned out, they're better off that they were outside the lottery system and were able to pick first again. Can you explain how the process works? And
sure.
Regardless of the outcome, whether it's good news or bad news for the White Sox, explain a little bit about what goes into where the White Sox ended up picking.
So, okay, it is an honest to goodness ping pong ball machine that has, I believe it's, I'm off the top of my head, but 14 ping pong balls in it. And that gives you 1,001 number combinations. And so each team has its proportion of number combos that, you know, correspond to them. And it's not in order. So if the balls come out 14, 12, 10, 8, it's not a combination of 14, 12, 10, 8. It's 8, 10, 12, 14. So the low numbers are for the teams who have the highest odds of getting it. And the high numbers is you have, I think there's one team that the last team in it, the 18th team, it's like, it has to be like 11, 12, 13, 14. Only is the only combo. Mm. But the big thing about all this is like you mentioned, we now have every year, we have teams that are in the lottery but aren't eligible to win it. And so if they get picked, it becomes a null selection. If you're in there, I get to know, like, hey, okay, they would have been there. The Nationals, if there wasn't these prohibitions, the Nationals would win this thing a lot. They've had a couple of years where they weren't eligible, but they would have gone very highly. But this, so basically, it the whole point of this, though, I would say, to pull it back, is MLB and the PA looked at what happened with the Astros, looked at what was happening with the Orioles in the 2010s, and said, we don't want there to be a valid reason why you would want to win 45 games. You know, we've had teams still do it.
We know.
Anyone listening to this might remember that. You know, but they're not doing it now because it's like, hey, that guarantees us the number one pick. They're doing it now just because it happens. So that's the whole purpose of it. And the other idea of it is that it does mean we have these kind of outlier events where the Guardians go from having very low odds to getting the number one pick in the draft. We have had teams, you know, the Twins in year one went from being like one of some of the lowest odds in that lottery to being a team that had a top five pick, and they got Walker Jenkins, who's now one of the better prospects in the game. It does kind of shake it up that way, and it's fascinating to see kind of how it kind of changes history a little bit compared to how it used to be.
So when it comes to the White Sox and your initial read on the draft class, obviously, White Sox fans are hoping for one or two, but say, is there a tier, a cutoff between 1 and 7 to where it's a good outcome for the White Sox, even if they don't finish in their first two top spots.
Yes. Now, this is viewed as a much deeper class than last year's at this time. Obviously, things change every year. But the other thing I would say with this is okay, so we are sitting in this year with the year where I would say we probably have a more clear number one prospect right now. Rochelowski, the UCLA shortstop, is a more clear number one than any year I can remember, probably going back to 2019 with Adley Rutschman. But even the Adley Rutschman year, that was Adley Rutschman and Bobby Witt Jr. And C.J. Abrams, I should say. So that it was a little bit cloudier. Yes, Paul Skeens ended up being the number one pick. But at this time, that year, Paul Skeens was coming off of a really good – it was an Air Force transfer. It was coming off a really good fall ball. Kralowski is the clear number one. But when you talk about guys like shortstop Grady Emerson, it's a really deep high school class. So it does feel like that you're talking – if you're in the top seven or eight – it should be a good year to be picking near the top. To go, you know, kind of the counter to last year where it's like, you really didn't want to be picking six last year and be a team that checked off your box that you won the lottery, quote, won the lottery, and then get disqualified for a future year. That wasn't the class to do it. This is one where if you get fifth or sixth, then it means you can't pick high next year. That's probably not a terrible outcome.
Okay, then the other event that I think you personally are most closely associated with here.
Rule 5 fever.
Yeah.
Rule 5 fever.
How is your Rule 5 fever right now?
I'm saying I'm at 103, 104. Like I'm still functional. Like
you're not hallucinating.
I don't have to be hallucinating. I don't have to be put in the ICU or anything, but at the same time, it's always like the fun part of this is it's always a race because we're doing a lot of other things too. But one of these years, I have this dream that the final pick of the major league portion is going to be selected, and I'm going to be able to say, like, if you are a Baseball America reader, you've already had previews of every single player who was picked. It's an impossible dream, but I will have that dream, in as many years as I can.
Why do you like it so much?
I think the White Sox are a perfect example of why I like this, which is, so, okay, for one thing, I love the fact that this is this kind of historical anachronism that has lived for 125 plus years now, because really what it starts from was the idea that you don't want teams hoarding talent in the minor leagues that is big league caliber talent to go elsewhere. And again, this is in the 1901, 1902, 1903 point where it's like, hey, this team over there won't let us buy their player and bring them up to the major leagues because at that point, the minor leagues were their own separate entity, and it's like, no, but if we give you him, we're not going to be able to win our league crown, and that's the most important thing in our, of our year. So this was a system that was organized to say, look, we're not going to keep players stuck at lower levels. So if there's a Class A player, and he could play at Class B player who could play at a Class A league, or a Class A player could play at a Double A league, this is a way to move talent up the ladder. And then it somehow has stuck around all through the arrival of the amateur draft, and that way the first-year player draft, as they call it now, all the way through numerous CBAs. But I think the White Sox are a perfect example of why this should exist, which is if you look at, obviously anyone listening to this knows, if you look at what Shane Smith and Mike Vassell did last year, that was effectively, by major league standards, free talent. That was the cost of a Major League Rule 5 pick is $100,000, and you get that player. And now, like Shane Smith and Mike Vassell, I would say in Shane Smith's case, like the hope is if he can just do something similar to that going forward, he would be an excellent member of the White Sox rotation for years to come. In Mike Vassell's case, I will say, if the number of innings he threw last year makes it hard for me to believe, to do that again would be remarkable because he was incredibly durable and incredibly useful as a pitcher who could give a team quantity of relief innings like he did. But that was two-plus war players. The White Sox didn't really have those kind of guys the year before. And here they are. The Rule 5 draft allows them to say, hey, Shane Smith is the perfect example of surplus talent. If Shane Smith stayed with the Brewers, I don't know if he'd have pitched in the majors this past year because I know he found the changeup and all that, but this is the Brewers. They had Chad Patrick and Logan Henderson and a number of guys kind of stuck in AAA for the majority of the year who were quality pitchers, just they had such good pitching. Shane Smith probably would have been behind those guys. He gets the opportunity, and instead of being stuck in AAA, he's basically able to kind of really front a rotation in a lot of ways. I mean, had a great start to the season, had a little bit of a dip, but then showed, I feel like, in the second half, like, hey, there's some staying power here. He kind of really, you know, pitched well down the stretch, I feel like. And I feel like that's the perfect example of why I get excited about the Rofi draft. I love, for one, it makes teams make decisions. Teams can tell us, they can say all the time, we love our 2022 first-round pick. We think he's great. I know he hasn't performed like, but we think he's great. And then the Rule 5 protection decision comes, and they go, we're leaving him unprotected.
Kind of like Peyton Paulette for the White Sox this
year. You can
second round pick. Yeah.
But if you don't protect him, you've now hit this decision point, and you've made a clear decision that indicates something. I like that part. And then I like the part that for players, there are players whose lives will be changed because they've been toiling through the minors year after year. And just by the mere fact that they get selected in the Rule 5 draft, even if they never stick, even if they just get to go to a big league spring training and then they get offered back to their original team, just by being on the 40 man, their salaries go up. Just going forward, they get paid more because they are now someone who's been on a 40 man roster. So lives are changed just by the mere, if you are on the major league portion, minor league side lives are changed too, but it's a little different. But on the major league portion, the minute you hear your name called, for one, you now know I've got a real chance to be a big leaguer. I'm going to spring training for a real chance to be a big leaguer because they wouldn't have picked me if not for that. But two, even if you don't, you know that you're going to be bumping up, your paychecks are going to look a little bigger. And by doing that in spring training, in big league games, maybe someone else sees you. And again, it sets in stage something for down the road too.
Kind of like Gage Workman. He kind of bounced around because, you know, teams had to carry him. And, you know, White Sox were one team that took a shot on him. It didn't last. At one point, the White Sox had three Rule 5 picks.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. But, you know, it didn't quite work. But then he got claimed again, I think. So he's...
And he's now, this is one of those little sub-rules that's pretty fascinating. And if he gets picked again this year in the Rule 5 draft, which he's eligible, if you get outrighted twice, you can declare as a free agent. So
he's rooting for it?
Theoretically, if you're a team picking him and you like him, again, you have to make a sales pitch. But so let's say you bring a guy to spring training. We've seen in the past times where that player declares free agency and then re-signs with the team that selected him as a minor leaguer. So if you said, like, hey, it's not the time right now, but we love you and we want you in AAA and you're going to come back up at some point, sometimes you will see it's kind of almost like it's a little bit of almost a loophole to the Rule 5 because that player, you obviously have to keep a major league player on your active big league roster or send him back. But if you outright that player, there's a chance that you could keep him then without having to trade for him because he declares a free agent. He gets to choose whatever team he wants to go to. Sometimes Daniel Stump, I think, did that many years ago now. They're like, no, I'm going to stick with the team that picked me. And then got back up to the big leagues with them.
Yeah, going back to Smith and Vassell, that's the amazing thing about their seasons is that at no point was there a consideration of, oh, these guys have to be on the roster. This is compromising the staff.
They earned it.
They got past the 90-day mark with no problem. Smith went on the injury list briefly just for a rest period because he's kind of wearing down. But he bounced back just fine. So, you know, with the Rule 5 draft of White Sox picking second this year, are they going to get that same kind of fortune here?
Obviously,
at the top.
I will say, like, if you're ranking, like, we are seeing teams do a better job in the Rule 5 draft than they used to. There are less flights of fancy of this guy's in low A, he throws really hard, doesn't know where it's going yet, maybe let's bring him in. That guy doesn't get picked now. Now I think teams much more are picking players who have a chance to contribute right away. They've come to realize, like, if you study this, I've studied this more than probably someone should, but if you study it over like 25, 30, 40 years, the best thing I could say is what we saw with Smith, what you saw with Vassell. Don't draft a Rule 5 guy because you hope that in 4 years he's going to help you. Draft a Rule 5 player because in year one he can help you. The best players in the, even the 2020s, Garrett Whitlock with the Red Sox, Smith. You know, we've seen these guys who give you, Akil Badu did this with the Tigers where he had one good year. It was the year he was picked. Sometimes we see that. Draft a guy for the Rule 5 because he can help you now. Now, I think the White Sox still are in a situation here. Like, I'll ask you, you're the expert on this. Like, if you said right now, looking at their roster, what is the clear and glaring holes where it's like, okay, they could use something?
They need outfielders, outfield depth. But if you're looking at kind of the Rule 5 talent, looking at your list of now 75 players on the list.
Largely pitchers because that's what
they're
doing.
And they could use velocity, too, out of the bullpen.
And there are some guys in this. And I'll see, this is where I think, like, I'll throw a name out that may not be at all, but like, okay, Keegan Gillies, who with the Orioles, who's this 6'8" guy who has really over the top, throws sliders from that slot, which is a little weird. I wouldn't be shocked to see a guy like that who then converts to being more of a reliever. Like, there are guys like that where you're like, okay, is he going to ever be one of the top five guys, six guys on your staff? No. But if you can find a guy who can valuably give you, be your 10th guy on your staff, that's real value. The tricky part, I think, a lot of times we do run into with the Rule 5 draft is, like, I was writing up first baseman. Like, Blaze Jordan is pretty famous first baseman. I promise you, there are going to be first basemen who play in the big leagues this year who are worse than Blaze Jordan. But the difference is are there going to be first basemen who spend the entirety of the season in the big leagues? Are there relievers? Everyone talks about how there's not that much pitching, you know, mm-hmm. No. When it comes to, like, the middle relief, the lower leverage arms, there's more guys. You see it in AA and AAA. The list of guys who throw 96, 97, 98 with a second pitch, that list is so long, it's astronomical. But are you going to be the guys who, are they going to be the players who can stick the whole year? Because usually the value of those players is they come up for a month when you need it, they go back down, they come back up, they go back down.
Yeah.
That's where it gets trickier. There are some outfielders in this class who I think are solid, but is probably more of the backup outfielder variety. It's hard to say, like, hey, this is the perfect fit name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to, of course, think of the names of players I just wrote up. Like Clark Elliott, who's an okay, you know, outfielder in the A system, but he's really kind of left field profile. I think it's probably more likely pitchers, just because the nature of it now, about 80% of players who are picked these days in the Rule 5 draft are pitchers, usually pitchers with AA, AAA experience. That's the way it's tweaked a little bit. Used to be you saw a lot more, you used to see a lot more kind of position players that they get picked and you're like, I don't know how that guy's going to stick. Now, usually when a guy gets picked, you can see how they're going to get stick.
Okay, well, when the White Sox do make their pick, Baseball America will be the first place I look for. Did JJ write him up, and did JJ and the crew write him up?
And I promise you, if we didn't, we'll have him written up within, like, a few minutes after the
draft. And you will be probably kicking yourself. Like,
yes. Oh, I, if it's pick two, I mean, that will hurt. I do remember, I did write up a guy for the Orioles who's a very interesting guy who has not pitched in affiliated ball since 2015, but he's pitching well in the Dominican Winter League. Lead-on, and they signed him as a minor league free agent. And I wrote him up specifically because there was a couple of years ago, I'm like, okay, we're going it. We're 3-for-3. We're 4-for-4. And then the Cardinals selected Wilking Rodriguez. And I got to be honest, I was like, who?
A scream erupts from the room.
And I was like, what? And I looked it up, and he had pitched in Mexico, but he hadn't pitched in the U.S. since, like, 2014. And I'm like, okay, how am I going to get that one? So this year, if Giancarlos Rodriguez, I think it is, gets picked, you will hear a scream from me of, like, this year I got it. This year I wrote that guy up.
I'm looking forward to it, looking forward to the audio. If we do hear that scream, we'll cut it. We'll splice it in our podcast. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate your time and your expertise.
Thank you, Jeff. It was great to see you.
As we mentioned in the intro, the White Sox officially signed left-handed pitcher Anthony Kay, as the 40-man roster is now currently at 35 players, and Kay will be part of the White Sox starting rotation, at least to start. In 2026, Kay shared why he chose the White Sox.
You know, I had a Zoom call with you know, a bunch of the pitching guys and coordinators, and, you know, with Will Venable, and, you know, it seems like a really good fit for me to, you know, come back to America and kind of, you know, get back into the big leagues. And, you know, I think, you know, we had a pretty similar vision of, you know, what I wanted to do, and I think it was a really good fit.
A big factor, according to Kay, is how successful the White Sox were with Eric Fetty and Garrett Crochet.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing was kind of the success that they had with, you know, Eric Fetty coming back over from Korea. I think it was pretty similar situation to, you know, be able to, you know, come back over and kind of thrive in the role of, you know, being back in the big leagues. I think another thing is, you know, the success that they had with Garrett Crochet and, you know, having him go from a reliever back to a starter, I think kind of, you know, show that they have a plan for guys like me. And, you know, it really showed that the success that they've had was a huge part of it.
Finally, Our James Vegan has a feature about Kay's official signing on SoxMachine.com. Check out that article online. But Vegan did ask Kay about the thought process for him returning back to the major leagues.
What was kind of your thought process? Were you kind of always intending to try to return to the States? How much did you consider kind of continuing your success over there? And, you know, what was really the winning factors for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an option to, you know, stay over there. I think, you know, originally, you know, when I first signed over there, the goal was to be over there for 2 years and come back. And I think, you know, once I had the option to come back, you know, really, it really played a big role in you know, staying home a little bit closer to home and, you know, being able to play in the big leagues again.
And you had a lot of success last year with, you know, showing hitters a lot of different fastball shapes and really, you know, being able to mix sinker, cutter in the zone. How much, when you're talking about what the alignment you found with the White Sox pitching development and, you know, coaches, how much did you see like your style of pitching working with what they're already trying to accomplish here?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely showed me, you know, what kind of stuff they had ready for me. And I think, you know, just the stuff that they showed me really showed that, you know, they can help me out with the, you know, game planning and scouting and stuff like that to, you know, be successful this year.
This is Josh again from the Winter Meetings Radio Row. We finally found a soundproof-ish room in the Winter Meetings, but now I'm joined by Courtney Finnicum, a good friend of the show. She's the host of the Pitch and Moan podcast and also contributes to the Baseball Isn't Boring. And whenever they get good White Sox interviews, it's always Courtney conducting them. And Courtney, thanks so much for hopping on the Sox Machine podcast, the Winter Meetings edition.
The Winter Meetings edition. Never thought I'd say those words, but here we are. We're together. I love coming on. You know that. I always appreciate it. Pleasure to be with you this afternoon.
So this is your first Winter Meetings.
My first one.
And thoughts?
Well, this is kind of like, and it's convenient because we're almost on the Disney World property. It's kind of like Disney. It's like baseball on steroids, Disney version. Like, it's constantly busy. There's people running around the lobby. It's packed. It's overwhelming, but it's a really cool scene. And one thing that I had a discussion with my old co-host, Johnny Gomes, yesterday was you really get a snapshot of the layers of baseball and how big the game is. Because it's not just agents and media. I mean, it's mm-hmm. PR people. There's so many layers to this game that you don't really realize until you can see it all in front of you.
Yeah, it's. I've been trying to decipher what all the different colors mean on the badges. I finally figured it out.
Yes.
A couple hours before I have to leave.
Of course.
So great timing on my part. With your first Winter Meetings, for anyone that it gets an opportunity, for those that listen that are in media or aspiring to be in media, if you ever get a chance to cover the Baseball Winter Meetings, you must find yourself in the Scott Boras media scrum. So how was your first Scott Boras media scrum?
So I approached it, and I'm not sure if I just wasn't know what to expect. I've certainly seen so many pictures from the Scott Boras scrum before, but seeing it in person, it's like nothing you've ever seen before. And I thought Aaron Boone's scrum was busy yesterday. It had nothing, no comparison to Scott Boras. And I actually finally got in the middle of it, and I got a great picture of Scott just doing his thing in his element, but oh my gosh, it is overwhelming.
Yes.
Those scrums. It is overwhelming.
For you Game of Thrones fans, if you watch the Battle of Winterfell, where Jon Snow can barely breathe because there's so many people on top of each other, that's kind of what it's like.
Yes, that is a perfect way to put it.
And Bruce Levine, of course, always finds a way to be right next to Scott and have the perfect angle.
It honestly made me laugh when the first person I saw front and center was Bruce. I gave him a little heads up because I'm like, you know what? Respect. Respect.
Before we get into some White Sox talk, we did get some big moves finally in the winter meetings. Everybody said it was going to be pretty slow, and then it was seemed like back to back. Kyle Schwarber is returning to the Philadelphia Phillies, a 5-year contract, $150 million. So I'm assuming that it was Schwarber's side that leaked what the Pirates had offered as a floor to convince Dave Dombrowski and the Phillies, even though I'm sure they didn't need much convincing. To go after Schwarber in a big way. Courtney, what do you think? 5 years, $30 million a season for a DH.
Honestly, he's earned that.
Yeah.
He's earned that. And I get that, you know, the whole DH tag. But man, he was valuable to that Phillies team last year. He really was. And I was, you know, a little bit biased because I wanted him to go to the Reds. I wanted the small market team to get that boost finally. You know, hometown kid too from Cincinnati would have been a great story. But inevitably, if he was going to go with a big market team, I'm glad he stayed in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's I can't imagine many teams look at that contract and say there's just no way we can meet it. So, but
that
I think that's the difference between Dombrowski and everybody else. And he's clearly done this with several organizations. When he wants somebody and he can convince, he's got a very eager owner in John Middleton.
Absolutely.
When he's got that pairing with an eager owner, it's hard to beat Dave Dombrowski. So.
And it's even more disappointing when you mention Dave Dombrowski, knowing that the White Sox had him at one point.
Yeah. Way back.
Imagine.
Way back. So the Schwarber's back to the Philadelphia Phillies. Next 5 years, over under 180 home runs hit by Schwarber.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness. I'm just going to trust my gut here. Over.
Yeah.
Going over.
It realistically could be 200, 40 a season from Schwarber. He's been that good as of late. And then a bit of a surprise because on Monday we heard some rumors, and maybe they still hold a little water from the Dodgers' perspective, but talking to Cody Stavenhagen of The Athletic, who covers the Tigers, he doesn't seem like a Tarik Skubal trade is imminent. The Dodgers' interest in Skubal, and of course every team would be interested in Skubal.
Certainly.
But it's the Dodgers signing Edwin Diaz to a record-setting contract for a closer, 3 years, $69 million. What do you make of a closer making $23 million a season, Courtney?
Well, I will be honest. I told a couple of people on Sunday that I thought Edwin Diaz would go to the Dodgers. That was a kind of a rumor that was making its way around. I am shocked by the contract, though. I mean, Edwin Diaz didn't exactly have the strongest year with the Mets. So that amount of money for a closer, for really a one-inning guy, I was pretty shocked by that.
This would be the second largest free agent contract in White Sox history.
You know, you had to throw that in there, didn't you?
Like trying to make sense of it, like $23 million a season. The Dodgers are willing to spend on Edwin Diaz, a closer, and Jerry Reinsdorf won't even touch that amount for never can.
I'm kidding. Literally.
It's that bad right now. Okay, so move over to the Chicago White Sox. Obviously, baseball isn't boring with Rob. Strong ties with both Sox teams, the Boston Red Sox and the Chicago White Sox. So we heard coming into the winter meetings that the Red Sox are very interested in Kyle Teal, but from a White Sox perspective, Courtney, that doesn't make any sense at all. Why are the Reds? Do the Red Sox just have a change of mind? Like, oh, actually, hold on. Wait, can we get Kyle Teal back? We didn't mean to trade him to you for Garrett Crochet.
So I can pretty much tell you, because I asked the Red Sox beat writers about this. I'm like, what's the real story here? Like, why is this being floated out there? Because on the White Sox side, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And basically, it is that they feel a need. They feel kind of almost remorse that they included Kyle Teal in the Garrett Crochet trade, but they had to do it, obviously. But the Sox have no interest in making that move. But I have confirmed with multiple sources this past 2 days, they are actively shopping Edgar Caro. Actively.
I could see where the Red Sox calling about Kyle Teal and Chris Getz saying, no,
yes.
What about Edgar Caro? And the Red Sox would be like, I'll call you back.
100%. I would say that's pretty accurate.
I'm not getting a good sense. I'm with you, Courtney. Caro is actually available, podcast listeners. The White Sox may trade him before spring training. And that seems, I think an Edgar Caro trade is more likely than a Luis Robert Jr. trade.
Fully agreed.
We could be wrong about that.
I agree.
But based on what we're hearing here as far as interest, but I'm not getting a lot of, using a Gen Z term, good vibes that teams are high on Caro, that they will take that counter offer by the White Sox seriously. I don't know what Caro's market is.
So that's, speaking to somebody last evening about this, he seems to think that Caro is going to draw a lot of interest and a lot bigger package than maybe we think or what we realize.
Okay.
Yes. Now, this is someone that was a little bit from the Edgar Caro camp, admittedly, so he could just be, you know,
sure.
pumping up Edgar Caro.
Tis the season
for that. But it'll be interesting. You know, out of those two, though, Teal's not going to be moved. Caro would be moved, 100%.
Yeah. And then it'll be interesting to see if the White Sox do keep Corey Lee, who is out of options, yes, to be the backup catcher, or they have to go find another backup catcher behind Kyle Teal. And then Peter Fairbanks. So podcast listeners, Jim and I talked about this late last night when we returned. It was like 11 o'clock at night in Orlando. Talk about Peter Fairbanks and just how that didn't make much sense. And I said, if it's more than $7 million a season, I don't know, I'm out. Yeah. Because I think the White Sox have bigger needs. And obviously the order of operations of Peter Fairbanks is ready to sign now, but some outfielders are not ready to sign. Well, you can't wait for the outfielders to make up their mind, because if you do like Peter Fairbanks, you're going to lose out on Peter Fairbanks.
Very true.
That's just how free agency works.
Yep.
Courtney, it sounds like the White Sox interest in Peter Fairbanks is real.
Yes, it is. I can confirm that as well.
And the White Sox are willing to go 2 years with Peter Fairbanks. Could Peter Fairbanks be the biggest offseason move the White Sox make?
You know what's interesting about this particular potential move here is that there seems to be some interest from Peter Fairbanks with the White Sox. So that's actually a little refreshing to hear, that there is a player out there, a veteran player, that is interested in coming to the South Side. You know, we don't hear that too often. So from what I've heard, and I just heard this morning, actually, that the years and the money might trip that up a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think that will be, again, we need a veteran presence, and I think that would be a good move for the White Sox. I actually do.
If I'm Peter Fairbanks' agent, I'd be like, Edwin Diaz.
Yeah, good point.
Just signed.
Good point.
For $23 million a year.
Well, I also heard an interesting little tidbit as well. If the Fairbanks deal doesn't come through, that they may sign Dustin May to close. Not sure if you heard that rumbling.
Closes. See, I had Dustin May, my off-season plan project.
Oh, okay. Very nice.
To be a reclamation project as a starting pitcher.
Okay.
But to have Dustin May be a reliever. Now, that is interesting. I didn't think about that.
That is something that I heard just this morning. So for the podcast listeners, right, that is a fresh rumor.
There you go. Courtney Finicum giving
news.
Us great intel.
Breaking news.
We also got a chance to wrap up as far as this segment, because Jim and I spoke about 30 minutes on this particular topic last night. The Chris Getz media scrum. And it's just a 40-second soundbite when we look back at it, when he's talking about valuing process over results right now. Courtney, what do you make of Chris Getz's stance? Because this clearly irritated White Sox fans last night and this morning that woke up and heard this soundbite, especially on Sox Machine and social media. What do you mean process over results?
And I got to say, I had this discussion last night as well after the Getz scrum. And at some point, you got to start focusing on results. You know, they're coming off their third year in a row of 100-plus losses. At some point, process over results is not going to fly. So to me, 2026, there's got to be some results. So I think Sox fans have every right to be frustrated by that, because it's time. You can't continue to be in the cellar. You just can't.
Yeah, and I'm curious on how today's media scrum will be. Podcast listeners, I'll be already on my way to the airport in my
great timing by you, Josh.
In my infinite wisdom, booking a cruise a year ago.
I mean, I understand why you did it, but man, the timing on you.
Yeah,
the timing.
I picked the wrong days.
Yes.
But Jim and James will be there at the MLB draft lottery, and James will be part of the Chris Getz media scrum as well. So we'll see what Getz says. He's not oblivious, especially the White Sox PR team as well. He may want to address this late on Tuesday, maybe reiterate as far as his stance when it comes to process and results. But it's funny to say we're not looking to add major veteran free agents,
right?
Because we're not in that position yet. But we might spend the majority of my offseason budget on a closer.
It's actually a very good point.
Is this Rick Hahn we're talking to?
Yes. But what also I found interesting on that same note is that you had Will Venables say yesterday during his scrum that he predicts that this team will be significantly better.
Yeah.
So something's got to give here.
And Venable, when asked about the closer, because I think it was Scott Merkin, Merk asked him about, do you need an established closer?
Yes, he did ask that, yep.
And Venable, again, to reiterate from last night, he also needs a 6th, 7th, and 8th inning guy.
He did say that, yep.
So please don't give me a 9th inning guy. If you give me a 9th inning guy, if Fairbanks signs with the White Sox, it's not guaranteed he's always going to pitch the ninth inning.
Very true. And, well, Venable doesn't do it like that usually. So right. he could be a seventh inning guy. It,
is
know?
Fairbanks okay with that? Because obviously saves raises your price.
Yes, it does.
As a closer.
Yes,
again, Edwin Diaz is getting $23 million now. Is Fairbanks okay with being used? However, if the highest leverage situation coming up 3, 4, 5 hitters is in the seventh inning and Venable says it's your turn,
right.
Peter, are you okay with
are
that?
Are you good with that? Right.
Typically, you would baseball players would say, yes, put me in, coach.
Of course.
But let's remember Craig Kimbrell and that whole experience.
Let's not remember Craig Kimbrell and that whole experience.
Yeah. It's, but sometimes relievers can be divas.
Yeah, very, very, very much. And on that same note, you know, Will Venable did mention all the one-run losses.
Yeah.
And he was quick to not blame it all on the bullpen or the pitching, which I understand, but a lot of that was the bullpen. So that needs to be rectified this coming season.
So the two big news items for the White Sox is going to be the MLB draft lottery. We'll see where they are selecting. The Rule 5 draft, I did run into Gene Watson, the director of player personnel for the Chicago White Sox, on the floor. Very likely, he said, that the team will be taking someone in the Rule 5 draft. As you just heard earlier in the podcast, J.J. Cooper dropped some names. So we'll see who the White Sox take on Wednesday. Any predictions of what the White Sox can do before you leave the winter meetings in Orlando? Or I guess we can also zoom out between now and Sox Fest at the end of January.
Yep.
So that gives you 6-7 more weeks to work with, Courtney. What are you hoping the White Sox achieve this offseason?
In my fantasy world or my real world? Because, you know, my fantasy world
Let's go with the fantasy world.
Okay, my fantasy world. Solidify first base.
Okay.
Solidify first base. In fact, Will talked about that. You know, in the same breath, also mentioning that Vargas was going to be between third and first again. So it seems a little convoluted, but solidify first base. Maybe that's a Ryan O'Hearn, right? Maybe it is. Maybe it is. And then please, for the love of God, figure out the corners in the outfield. For the love of God.
I hear you on that one.
Please.
I hear you on that
one. And then they at least need one, and maybe it is a Dustin May where they need at least one starting pitcher.
Dustin May is a reliever, though. I am intrigued.
That was floated to me this morning.
I am intrigued. Well, Courtney, as always, thank you for coming on the show. Again, you can check out Courtney's podcast, Pitch and Moan. And, of course, Baseball Isn't Boring. Follow them on Instagram. They do a great job of cutting clips. Her interview with Mike Vassell was fantastic.
Thank you.
So, again, whenever they get the White Sox players and coaches, it's usually Courtney conducting those interviews, and she does a terrific job. And, Courtney, thank you so much for coming on, and congrats on your first winter meetings.
Thank you, as always, Josh. I appreciate it.
And that will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can also listen and watch our videos on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. Continue to follow us on social media. We're at Sox Machine. Follow James Fegan at JR Fegan. Both Jim and James will continue to report news out of the winter meetings in the next couple of days. And we'll report that on social media and, of course, on SoxMachine.com. So follow us there. We're also on Blue Sky at SoxMachine.com. You can follow James at JR Fegan. SoxMachine.com. And of course, you can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh. If you enjoy our work and you want access to all of our coverage of the winter meetings and the Chicago White Sox happening, sign up to become a Sox Machine subscriber at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5 and you get a discount on annual subscriptions. Again, go to SoxMachine.com/products to sign up today. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're up for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.